This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode is brought to you by Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class is an online video platform geared towards making you a better hunter. Watch instructional videos taught by hunting experts like Remy Warren, Randy Newberg, and Corey Jacobson. After the hunt, learn how to prepare your harvest from world-class wild game chefs like Hank Shaw and Jamie Tajan. Whether it's your first year hunting or you grew up doing it, Outdoor Class will take your skills up a notch. Use code EMPIRE20 at checkout to save 20% off. Visit OutdoorClass.com to learn more.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today, this is kind of a BS session, but I had a guy reach out to me and basically just ask me, hey, if you ever want an average guy's take on hunting gear, why don't you, I'd be willing to hop on the show. And that's what we did. His name's Ryan Quirk. And Ryan is from the East Coast, I believe Massachusetts. And today we talk about hunting gear and equipment. We talk about how he makes his decisions, the pieces that he kind of uses. Let's see, I think a heavy focus of this is about clothing, like everything from base layers, insulation layers, and outer shells to socks and boots, boot covers, rubber boots. We even talk about cold weather saddle hunting, meaning how you layer up using a saddle. He has some experience with that. And we even talk a little bit about e-bikes. I have, now that I have an e-bike, I've used it a handful of times, and you know, listen to this episode to get my review on it. Other than that, I mean, it's a straight to the point episode. This is one of those episodes where maybe you listen to it, you know, you go hunt the morning, you got that, you know, midday to do nothing, and then you go to the tree stand, right? Listen to this episode in between that, and it's just a good, fun, exciting, educational, and all those other words, all those other buzzwords that I would use to get your attention for this episode. But it's a good one. If you are looking for a saddle, go check out Tethered. Tethered has all the saddle hunting accessories that you need. They have the climbing sticks, they have the platforms, they have the actual saddle itself. They are your one-stop shop for saddle hunting. And even in this podcast, you're going to hear Ryan talk about Tethered and how their customer service is amazing and how they want to help, you know, how they want to help their end user. So make sure you listen for that. Go check out Tethered. Hunt Stand, man. It's that time of year. We are documenting everything that we see. We've done our e-scouting. We are now in the woods, and it's time to document everything we see. Drop a pin on rubs, scrapes, stand locations, where you see deer, where you don't see deer, trails, bedding areas, all that stuff needs to be documented. On top of that, Hunt Stand has just released their Pro Whitetail upgrade. There's a slight upcharge for that, but you get so much more functionality with it. They have a rut map indicator. They have a new satellite imagery. They have forecasting tools, like all this really awesome functionality specifically for the whitetail hunter. So go check out huntstand.com. And then last but not least, it's that time of year where this is where the stories come. This is where the memories come. And if you can document your memory through like an action cam, like Tacticam, then you can take that memory home with you. You can show your kids, your wife, your buddies, your grandpa, who maybe not can't get into the woods anymore. And Tacticam has recently come out with their 6.0 version, and that has an LCD screen on it. It's 4K. It has image stabilization. So it's the real deal. So go over and check out the 6.0 Tacticam at Tacticam's website. And I believe that's it, man. We're good. We're good to go. Let's get into this episode, and let's talk about some hunting gear. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Ryan Quirk. Ryan, how we doing, man?
Doing great, man. How are you doing?
Doing good. Have you been out in the tree at all?
A little bit. I went out this morning, actually, for a couple hours, but a little dead. The weather here in Massachusetts hasn't been the best.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question. You live in Mass. Whereabouts in Massachusetts do you live? What do you do for a living?
So I'm about a half hour south of Boston. I live in Scituate.
Okay.
Which is right on the coast. I do outside sales for an electrical supply company.
Okay.
So kind of just sell to electrical contractors.
Nice. Nice. So do you yourself know how to do electrical work?
A little bit. I did a little bit after high school and just kind of being around it for so many years. So
yeah.
Now, I wouldn't hire me, but yeah.
That's funny. All right. So it's funny you say electrical, because I am looking at my office. I have another room that I'm in the process of building out in what I'm going to kind of turn into a storage area slash, I don't know, it might turn into another office or potentially a studio, a recording studio of sorts. So what I'm getting at is I have these electrical outlets. Number one, I suck at drywall. So there's these giant gaps around my electrical outlet. And so the so big that the covers of the covers don't even cover them. And second, I had to like redo the outlets. I don't know how many times because they weren't working. And so, you know, here I am questioning, okay, number one, is this outlet shut off? Can I work on it? And so instead of just like trying to figure out down at the fuse box which one to shut off, I just shut the whole house down. And luckily no one was here. And then everything had to be restarted, and all the ovens and all the digital clocks had to be. So long story short, I'm not confident in electrical work.
Hey, they make jumbo plates to cover that up.
Exactly. And I might need a couple jumbo plates. I don't even know if I'm looking at one. I don't even know if the jumbo plate would cover it up. That's how much I suck at drywall. Anyway, we're not here to talk about how bad I am at construction. Ryan, you reached out to me and you kind of said, hey, if you ever need a guest for any of your podcasts, I would love to chat with you. And here we kind of landed on the Hunting Gear podcast, and you kind of wanted to, you know, you threw a couple ideas at me about a regular guy or an average Joe's take on hunting gear and equipment. And so why don't you just kind of fill us in a little bit about what you're thinking, and then we can kind of take it from there and ask the right questions and go down the path to how you look at hunting gear and equipment, and maybe give tips on how others could potentially either save or get the most bang for their buck on hunting gear and equipment.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I started hunting. I was kind of self-taught, started in my early 20s, so didn't have all the money in the world to buy gear. So I, you know, started with low end Bass Pro clearance rack sort of stuff.
Yeah.
My base layers were all, you know, cotton thermals that I had. And just as, you know, researching online, time went by. I started getting into the merino wools with First Light, actually. And it sucked paying for it. But, I mean, night and day when you get into the right type of materials and finding what works for you.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of what I've started to realize now is I'm trying to find gear that not is necessarily hunting clothes,
yeah,
but, you know, maybe just gear that's warm and works, man, and that cuts out the wind. So, I mean, I have, let's see, like the First Light Merino base. I kind of ended up getting their couple of their different layers, like the thin hoodie. I think it's called the kiln in the furnace, but.
Yeah,
man. As far as clothes, I mean, comfort and something that's going to block the wind is kind of important for me.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this right now. You brought up a good point, or something that a lot of guys should think about, right? So when guys talk about being cold in the tree stand, and this is one thing that I've learned. You have a base. If let's just start with a layering. You have a base layer. You have the insulation layer, let's call it, and then let's just say the next level is the shell, right? And
yep.
And so, for whitetail hunters, for the most, like when I grew up, and as I got into, like before I started really thinking hard about my equipment, I never thought about a windbreak layer, right? Some of the Western themed insulation layers have that built into them, right? And so recently, recently as in the last 5 years, I've adopted Western insulation layers into my whitetail, for the most part, into my whitetail, like a down insulated jacket into my my whitetail gear. And so what this has done is it has actually allowed me to wear less bulky clothing to stay warm in the tree stand, because if it wasn't for that windbreak insulation layer, most of my gear was just these thick layers of, I don't want to say merino,
right? But some synthetic, some merino, but just like big fat hoodies, big fat fleece, you know, just big bulky types of garments that would just be bigger. And now I can take this insulation layer with me and just squish it down to the size of a softball, put it in my pack. And when I get there, it cuts out the wind. It does that job, but it also retains heat and it does that job. So it's almost like a multitasking type piece.
Yeah. I'm still on the hunt for that perfect shell, man. I haven't found it.
Yeah.
I sweat like a bastard.
Oh, I do too.
I don't understand. I mean, I could be, you know, December, low 20s in the morning, and I'm walking to my stand, well, walking to find a tree to climb in a t-shirt. And I climb that tree. By the time I get up there, I mean, sometimes, man, I'm taking off the shirt, shirtless in the dark, cooling down.
Yeah.
And then kind of getting dressed in the tree.
Yeah. And, you know, oops. That's the old wife calling. I got to hang up on her and finish this one. Sorry. That's unprofessional. That's unprofessional, but that's all right. I am also a sweater by nature. I am like, dude, I'm that guy that if I have to have my garments on point, because if I don't, not only do I sweat, like merino is great, but if you sweat through your merino or it really absorbs, it takes a long time. If it's really wet, even for merino to work properly. Mm-hmm. So when, like, for this rut, usually I will have a long sleeve base layer on, and that is it. Walking to the tree stand, I'll get it almost to the point of extremely cold, like almost shivering. But then when I climb up my tree stand, my blood starts to, you know, I would rather be extremely cold walking in and climbing up than being sweaty. Maybe not extremely cold, but sweaty, and then putting stuff on and then taking forever to cool down. I'd rather do all of that getting dressed in the tree stand. I pack everything in, get dressed in the tree stand, and kind of go from there. But when it comes to like the rest of, and let's stick with the clothing standpoint, like what has that evolution for you looked like?
I mean, starting, you know, from the beginning, I was wearing, you know, as far as base layers, I was doing the same thing. You know, whatever hoodie I had, you know, the thickest fleece I could find. And then I had, you know, just like a cheap kind of jacket shell that had no windbreaking capability at all over it. And then when I started to I have different synthetic bases. So, you know, like I said, I'll climb the tree in just whatever t-shirt, you know, so I can sweat through that, take that off, put it in the pack. And then I usually start with just like either a synthetic or a merino base. And then I have this like Cabela's mid-weight fleece that I found. And honestly, that's probably the best layer I've had out of anything as far as money and quality. I think I only paid like maybe $20 for this thing.
Okay.
And that thing is sweet. So, I mean, I can put on my merino that, you know, depending on the weather, whatever jacket. I have their mid-weight first light jacket they have. It's like the one under the sanctuary there.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about? So I have that. I wear that kind of like, I mean, most of the season up until it gets into cold in November. And then I start kind of layering up, you know, depending how long I'm going to be sitting that day. And then I have like a Cabela's kind of heavy jacket if I'm not going to be kind of going in too far, that I'll bring with me. Or I have my First Light, the Catalyst jacket. But I mean, I've, with that, man, still up like with that jacket, it just doesn't cut the wind for me. Warmth, yes, but any type of wind, and I still haven't found that piece that cuts that out.
And my piece isn't, you know, I talked about that that insulation layer. That's my wind cutting piece, but it's also not in the hunting category. I bought it from an Eddie Bauer closeout rack in one day we were at the mall and I just was sitting outside of a store on a bench while my wife was in, I don't know if it was like a makeup store or Victoria's Secret. I just noticed this Eddie Bauer rack that said like 30% off on it or something. And I stood up and walked over to it. And sure enough, that puffy jacket was in there. And so that I got real lucky with that piece. I think it was like $40 or something like that. And that's what I paid for it. And so then over top of that, then that I don't need a big heavy jacket unless it's super cold. And so my super cold weather stuff, I got from, I don't know if they make them the same way anymore, but it is a synthetic, it's not straight down, but it's a synthetic fill. But it's like a sleeping bag. They're my overalls and my large jacket are like a sleeping bag, and it retains heat so well that unless it's like in the negatives, I don't get that cold in the tree stand. Like typically the first thing to go is my feet, and once my feet go, then I'm done. I've since found kind of a remedy for that, but it's from Element Camo. And they've been sold or bought recently by another company. I'm not 100% sure on that, but then the products kind of changed a little bit, but the garments that I got are amazingly warm.
Yeah, man, I'll be honest with you. I've heard you talk about that Eddie Bauer jacket.
Yeah.
And dude, I've searched online trying to find that damn thing, man.
Right.
You know, getting up in the, you know, I do saddle hunts, so getting up in the tree and then, you know, I'm trying to not have some big bulky jacket and, you know, fitting it over the saddle. So
yeah,
that was funny, man. I've been trying to find that thing. I'm like, oh, I wonder what it is.
Right. Right. So, that's a little bit about, I mean, let me ask you this. You're a saddle hunter here. Like, this is something that I haven't had to deal with yet because we're getting into the cold temperatures right now. It's going to be warm for the most part this week, but this weekend is going to be fairly, it's going to be wet and cold. All right. And so how do you in a saddle address layers? Cause that's something that I need to kind of know how to do. Like if you need to take off or add while you're actually in the tree, in the saddle.
It's not easy. I've been wearing suspenders pretty much from day one with the saddle.
Right.
I got a pair of suspenders that are meant for like a tool belt. So that's kind of comes into play. So, you know, get up in the tree, you know, I'm just in a t-shirt or whatever. You got to take those suspenders down and, you know, everything will kind of slide down your butt. But what I do is start pulling stuff out of the pack and sort of kind of lay it over the bridge. And you kind of just have to go one by one, tucking it in, man. There's no easy way or smooth way to do it.
Yeah.
And then the only thing is once you have that jacket over, there's really, unless you have like, you know, you see some guys will kind of have their jacket cut on the sides and sewn up so they can kind of fit it over the edges of the saddle. But
right.
I just toss the thing over. There's really not much you can do about it.
Yeah. And there's one thing that I'm looking forward to. I noticed that on the overalls, so I have a pair of overalls that I wear, and that's extremely warm stuff. Depending yep. on, and I usually wear these mostly for a morning hunt, but the sides on them open up and they can zip down a little bit. So I think what I'm going to be able to do is get away with putting my base layer bottoms on, put my saddle on, and then, so the only thing that I'll have is the thing sitting out of the side. And then, so my tether, I can, attach it to the tree, right to the rope, and I'm good to go.
Hmm. Yeah. I've never tried. I mean, as far as, you know, in the cold and, you know, even in the tree and the saddle, my legs are never an issue.
Yeah.
It doesn't really bother me even if they do get cold. So I just kind of have like a pair of Catalyst pants that I wear a lot of the time. Where I have just like an insulated pair of like the Redhead Bass Pro pants that I wear, right. You know, if it's real cold, I can throw some. I think I have a pair of, I think you mentioned it, but the Merino Tech I came across that stuff a couple years ago for their base layers, and dude, those things, they're pretty good. I think I paid $40 for a pair of those, and they give you a free pair of socks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those socks, man, I wear those, you know, pretty much all season until, you know, those bitter days when I can, you know, if I need to throw a stick a pair of socks over. But yeah, that's pretty interesting, man. I've kind of debated it, like how it would work with bibs. But yeah, let me know how that goes.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm still in the learning process of hunting from a saddle. You know, hunting from a saddle is going to be easy as far as garments are concerned in the warm to, you know, lightly cool weather, and probably even easier in the, you know, in the evenings, because it's warm, then gets cold. It's not cold, 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 and then slowly warms up throughout the day. You've had the whole day for it to warm up. But that's the thing that I just keep thinking about is, how am I going to stay warm? Am I going to have to get dressed at the bottom of the tree, then put my saddle on at the bottom of the tree and that, all that stuff? Or am I going to be able to do it how I do when I'm in a tree stand, and that's just straight up, you know, it's easy. Sit down, take my boots off, hang them off to the side, put everything on and kind of go from there. Well, I guess we'll check it out. Hopefully I'm not having to layer up or layer down and a deer walks through while I'm doing that. That would suck, man.
I hear you, man. Yeah, that tricky thing, you know, you mentioned the boots and the saddle. You you got to get pretty creative, man, holding that boot while you're changing your socks, because it would suck if that thing fell down and you got to go down those sticks with one boot on.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would suck. I think that would actually hurt my feet, having to put my body weight on one of those lone wolf sticks that I have. So let's talk about socks and boots. What's your approach?
So my feet also sweat really bad.
Yeah.
So I usually just wear like those Merino Tech thin socks. Pretty much, I mean, still now, as long as I'm not going anywhere wet, I have a, you know, pair of like military type issue, just like those tan pack boots that I wear. And those are probably the only boots I've found so far that my feet aren't sweating through. And then, you know, if I obviously I'm going to be sitting out when it gets colder, I have a pair of, I hate wearing rubber boots, but a lot of the time I have to wear them. I either have a pair of Mucks, or I have, I'm probably going to butcher the brand name, but Hisia, I think it's called. And those are like an 800 gram insulated rubber boot. And then I have, you know, if I'm not going to be going through any mud water, I have a pair of just like 400 gram Irish setters. And when it gets real nasty, I have a pair of those Arctic Shield boot covers that I stick on over those.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Arctic Shield, dude, I can't believe people still wear rubber boots is what I'm getting at. I hate them, man.
I only have when I have to.
Yeah. They're number one, they're bulky. Number two, they don't necessarily, they may keep your feet warm, but maybe only if you're kind of moving around a little bit. They don't breathe. They hold moisture in. So then when the boot gets cold, the inside of your foot gets cold. And unless you have some kind of thermal insole or heating pad, then it just gets, it's just an ice box in there, and I don't like it. The Arctic Shield boot covers, I'm wearing less socks. I'm wearing hiking boots that are more agile walking through the woods. And I'll tell you this right now, you put those boot covers on and it doesn't feel like they're warm, but they're not cold. Right. And so almost like I want to say a little muggy almost, but not cold. And so I'd sit there. I can sit all day if I like, my mind will go and tell me to get down before my feet will go and tell me to get down. And so I don't know, man. I just really feel like people are missing out. For me, I have a pair of alpaca socks from, oh my God, the owner, if he heard me now, he Like I've talked to him, Alterra. The name of the company is called Alterra.
Yep.
Alpaca socks, and they're you know, it's not merino wool, it's alpaca wool, and it's the same thing. It probably even does a better job of that kind of wool than sheep do. Long story short, those with my crispy hiking boots and then the boot covers put on over top of it, I'll tell you, it's a game changer, and I feel way more comfortable in the stand in cold temps. So there's that.
Yeah, yep. I think I have an early generation. I mean, great, those boot covers.
Yeah.
Granted, my feet are big, but I do have a hard time stretching those damn things over the boots, man. But they are, yeah, they're a world of difference. And, you know, especially having your feet that sweat,
yeah,
you're able to just kind of toss those things on, man. It definitely makes a world of a difference.
Yeah. I wonder what would happen. I've never done this, but I wonder what would happen if I would actually take my boot off and maybe put in another big sock on and then put my feet in there without my boot on, if it would stay warmer yet, because air is the biggest insulator, not rubber, not fabric, not, you know, the reason insulation in a house is the way it is it's designed to create as much fluff or air in between outer wall and inner wall. And that is where you get your insulation from, is the air. So I wonder if that would work, man. I don't know.
Hey, give it a go. Put some of those hand warmers in there. I'm sure it'd be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. There's that. I do use some hand warmers sometimes. Like, talk to me. This is what I was thinking about the other day. I shoot my bow all year round, no gloves. I do not like to wear gloves while I'm hunting, right? So if I see a deer coming, most of the time I have enough time to take my glove off and put it in my pocket and shoot with my gloves off. In the past, there's been some times where I didn't have that time. Are you a glove guy, or do you have fingers cut out of your fingertips cut out of your gloves, or what kind of gloves are you going with?
So I'm not a glove guy, but I'm forced to wear them because I have bitch hands, man. So I never used to have issues, and you know, my buddies laugh at me about it, but I was working with acetone a few years ago on a boat, and dude, those rubber gloves melted off my hands, and I got that shit on my hands, and ever since then, man, my hands, dude, I'm 40 degrees, my hands start to get cold.
So you got chemical burns?
No, man, I don't know what the hell happened. I mean, I went in, scrubbed the hands, everything else, didn't get any burns. But since then, I've had my hands are just extra sensitive, and I've had really, really cold hands. Up until then, man, I never really hardly ever wore gloves. I just stick my hands in the pockets. But since then, call me crazy, but they get freaking cold now, man.
Yeah, I believe it.
So I'm actually, I'm a crossbow hunter.
Yeah.
I got some issues with my right arm, so I've been using a crossbow for probably the last 4 or 5 years or so. So with gloves, you can't really have anything real thick over your finger.
Right.
So you have to go with either not wearing it, or what I do is, I will wear some of those, fingerless gloves. And
yeah,
then underneath, I'll just put a thin pair of those black cotton kind of, tight gloves and through there. And I've found that works pretty damn good.
Yeah. I'll tell you this.
Then you get cold come over.
Yeah. So if I do wear gloves, it's like a mechanics glove, right? Or some kind of utility glove. It's not fluffy. It's something durable that I can push weeds out of the way. It's not fluffy. It's basically used for, I don't know, laborers. Okay. And then I get out, I take those off, put them in my pockets or in my pack. And then I have one of those, muffs. And you've seen quarterbacks in cold weather, they'll put their hands in those muffs. I have one of those, and that's what I keep my hands in. And sometimes if it's really cold, then I will put a hand warmer in there, and that keeps it warm. But while I got to pick my bow up to fight the cold or the direct contact, I've put tape, just some athletic tape around my grip. and that doesn't make it near as cold to touch as, you know, on that kind of stuff. Even with my tree stands, I usually wrap my tree stand base, or not the base, but the vertical bar and all of my climbing sticks with that as well. So it's not as cold to the touch per se. And it seems to be doing fine. Now, once you get into that snowy, 20 to 0 degrees, even below zero, now we start to get even the muffs and the hand warmers just aren't cutting it as much. So I haven't figured that out. I have to go back to a glove at that point. But, you know, for the upcoming 7 or 10 day forecast that I'm looking at, I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, same here. I mean, our weather, I think we're going to be at like 70 degrees this weekend.
Yeah.
So it has been cold, to tell you that.
Are you a hood guy or a stocking cap guy?
I go with the cap. I can't stand wearing a hood. I mean, sometimes, if it gets kind of nasty out, you have to. But I can't stand having a hood on. I feel like my hearing's blocked. You know, turning to left or right, I can't stand it.
Yeah, and most of the time, I'm taking, if I do have a hood on, you know, if I put my hood on, every time I look back and forth, I have to take my hood off anyway because it blocks a little bit of my view. And so I feel like I'm constantly putting it off and on. And so I'm a stocking cap guy as well. Now, I won't wear my stocking cap as I'm walking into the woods because, it gets hot and I don't want to, start breaking sweat, let that all escape. Mm-hmm. And then once I cool down, then I'll throw it on. So kind of go from there. But let's see here. We've talked about kind of the clothing aspect of it. Has there ever been a product that you were really hyped about to get, and then once you got it, you're like, dude, this sucks, man?
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but those tethered one sticks.
We had this example. I have to share this. I have to share this example or this story because you asked, is there anybody that I can't talk bad about, you don't want me to say any brands? And I said, no, on this podcast, we have a complete unbiased, I'm not going to tell you can or you can't say anything bad about a certain company. And I used Tethered as an example because they are a partner of this podcast. And so right now, you just said that, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Let's see.
But with that said, I mean, I love their saddle. I love their gear. Just those sticks, man. It's, put it this way, I wouldn't say they suck. I'm just not confident in the safety aspect of them.
Okay.
And the guys have been great. I had an issue with them a couple, actually last season, and it was just with the Dynalock twisting on me. So it kind of just scared the hell out of me. But they've been good, sent me out a replacement right away. And I'm actually in the works with them now. They answered me right away and getting these things, I think, sent back, either with going with the Gen 3s or trying something new.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So I think what we have here is an opportunity to talk about customer service, because one thing that I used to do was get a product. If it didn't work or I didn't like it, I used to, or something wrong with it, I would bitch and not do anything about it. And so since I've been in the industry, so to speak, they have a process for this. Most companies have a process that if you don't like it, it's broken or it's not performing up to whatever standard that you want, you call it in and you communicate with them. The communication part is the big one here. And so every time now I see someone talk shit on a company or trash a company, and it doesn't matter what company it is, if it's a company that I really like and someone's talking trash on them and I've had a good experience, I go, what did they say when you reached out to them? And most of the time they say, well, I haven't reached out to them yet. Well, then why are you talking trash on them? because the company more than likely, and the Tethered now is a perfect example. You have a problem. They want to fix the problem for you because they want you as a customer still. So every time you don't like it, reach out to the company, talk with someone, email someone. And yes, it might take a while for some companies, especially if they're smaller, to get back to you. But they most companies want to help you, and they want your continued support, and they probably do anything to keep you. So it sounds like Tethered's taking steps in the right direction to address the issues that you're having.
Yeah, man, I give a props to them. You know, they've admitted some issues with the sticks. You know, they're working on them, fixing them clearly, and they owned it, man, with that stuff, and they were cool. I mean, they sent me, when that happened, like a new stick within a couple of days, I had another one. You know, I emailed them this time, just kind of with some concerns I had, and they were cool about it. They understood, and you know, they had a return label, I think within a day or so. So, but yeah, I still rock their saddle, their platform, you know, some of their accessories like the gear strap and everything. So
Absolutely. And that's what, and that's what really good customer service is all about. And, and on top of that, being able to have a product where, like, I'm not going to recommend that you get a saddle and you don't practice with it and start hunting with it instantly, right? I'm going to say it takes, just like any tree stand, I mean, maybe not a ladder stand, but any type of mobile hunting tree stand or climber or saddle, it takes practice to properly use it. And so most companies, Tether is another example of Tethered having really good education, a really good educational content slash platform through their YouTube channel and through their website that is actually designed to help people get educated on how to use their products properly. Because sometimes on certain products, guys will get it and they won't. They'll assume they know how to use it. You know what I mean?
And so, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I just really feel like, especially these days with social media, with, YouTube, if a company is not providing that kind of those resources, they're losing automatically. So let's maybe end it on a different product. Do you have any other products out there that you've been disappointed with in the past? And I'll even share one. Go ahead. Do you have another?
Sorry. I thought you were going, trying to think. I would say that, so I also duck hunt as well.
Yes.
And, you know, I've gone through, you know, cheap shotguns and, you know, really was excited to kind of upgrade. And I got the A400 Browning, and everybody I knew who had one either had that, you know, or a Super Black Eagle. And I was hunting with that, man, and I was jamming up ammo left and right.
Yeah.
And I was real bummed out about it. And their customer service was great, man. They sent me a label, had the gun shipped out within a couple of days. They sent it back and they gave me a list of all the different ammo they used. And they're like, hey, we didn't find any issue at all. I bring it out again, first shot, jammed.
Yeah.
So I ended up finding out that it was more of like the gun just didn't like a 3.5 inch. But other than that, man, I switched back to 3 inch on that thing. It's been sweet ever since. So that's been, you know, it kind of gets back to like the money isn't always everything on stuff. So, for instance, so I have a, my crossbow is the Mission Sub 1, and I've had to send that back to the factory twice already.
That's
customer service though. They've been unbelievable. Yeah. It's just, I don't know if I just have bad luck, but
you know how frustrating that is for an end user? Like, you do the research, and I don't know about you. Like, for example, We got a garage door that's kind of acting funny. So I had to buy a new controller for it, and it didn't work. So we're going to have to send it back. It sucks to do. But with hunting gear, a hobby, a passion, whatever you want to call it, I'm excited to get this, right? Because I know how I'm going to, I'm already thinking about how I'm going to use it. So when I get it, and then whatever piece of equipment, clothing, accessory, you got to send it back. It's just, it's so frustrating to have to go to the post office, send it back, wait X amount of weeks until it comes. And then you're just like, dude, like I was so jacked to use this. Now here it is, the hunting season, and it's on back order, or it takes some time to get back. And I'm shaking right now thinking about it. Like, what would happen if a piece of equipment failed for me? Like my bow cam broke, or I needed to get a new bow cam, or something, some accessory, or like my limb cracked, or I'm just thinking, knock on wood, that don't happen. But what I'm getting at is the amount of time it would take, the rut would probably be over before I would get those parts that I need. And so, but like you said, it sounds like that company is taking strides to really take care of you.
Yeah. They've been good. I feel like a lot of the stuff kind of comes back with, you know, everybody's trying to make everything, you know, lighter, sleeker, everything else, but really you got to kind of look into the, you know, the quality of everything else. Going back with like the sticks, for instance, I've got a chance to use the B sticks. And, you know, they're a little heavier, but I mean, I have never used a stick that I felt more confident with than using those. So those have kind of been on my radar as far as, you know, looking to switch some stuff out. I mean, I don't give, you know, anybody, what am I going to say here? You know, I don't trash anybody for liking certain gear or, you know, you got to spend this much money on this and that, but I mean, you got to find out what works for you, right, honestly. So, I mean, those sticks, you know, like I said, that crossbow, that gun work great for some people. And maybe it's just me, man. I have had a lot of really bad luck. And I see people with the same gear with no issues, man. So maybe I just beat on stuff or something. But
yeah. Are you a believer that price reflects quality, or has there ever been a product that you spent a premium amount on and then it ended up being a turd?
Nothing really a complete turd, but I've felt like, and you know, just in the past with different gear, with, you know, with various things, it's like kind of a waste of money. But on the other end, you know, I've had gear that, you know, considered cheap or, you know, a clearance gear, and the stuff has performed great. So not always. I would say that, you know, a lot of the time cheap is cheap for a reason. But when it comes to expensive, it doesn't always mean that it's going to be something that's going to perform correct.
So. Right. Yeah, man. And so here's my thoughts on that. Typically, and this sucks because you really do want to support the companies within the industry, right?
Yep.
But for me, I have found that, let's say you take the label and you take camo, some camo pattern out of it, and it's just two items sitting next together, right? One is designed in the hunting industry and the other is outside of the hunting industry. I can find apparel, this conversation does not revolve around bows or guns or sights for that particular weapon. I'm talking about clothing. I'm talking about boots, socks, things like that. I can find two items that are almost similar on paper, similar design, similar feel, similar fit, function, all that stuff. But the hunting industry, you'll be paying more money to the tune of, I would say, 10 to 20% more, just because it's inside the hunting industry. And so outside of that Eddie Bauer jacket that I found, I went to like LL Bean, who, it's an outdoor company, but not necessarily a hunting brand. I want to support the hunting industry, but at the same time, man, it's like, it's tough when you're paying so much for a pair of pants or for a jacket or something, when there's other stuff out there that does the exact same thing for a cheaper price. And so, I'm still in the process of like making my decision of how I want to approach it, but I'm not a huge believer in camo anyway. So pattern doesn't necessarily affect my decision making. I can get away with browns or greens or, you know, light tans and just a mixture of that kind of stuff, which I do anyway, but it just like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree. I mean, most of my stuff just is camo just because, but as I get, you know, I've been getting more mobile and the camo doesn't matter, man. I'm just in searching out for something that works. And honestly, for, you know, for my type of hunting, a lot of the access is through residential areas to get into these pieces of woods. And I don't want eyes on me going in and out, whether it's, you know, anti-hunters or other hunters. So I actually just got, a couple years ago, I got an e-bike, which is a game changer.
Oh, dude.
And game hopping on changer. That thing, man.
Game changer.
If you hop on that thing riding down the road and, you know, you're in full camo and you got a bow, people are going to be looking at you. So
right.
I try to get on that thing and just get some, you know, throw a hoodie on and, you know, a pair of whatever, gray pants or something, man, and just get in there.
Yeah,
man, that bike, it is sweet, man, getting to some of these areas.
Yeah. Let me tell you real quick about this e-bike. And so I don't know if this secret just seems, it's not necessarily a secret. It's not necessarily a loophole. It's just how things are written. But so, and I've been meaning to talk about this anyway, because I went to South Dakota and I didn't have it when I was in Nebraska, but I could have used it in Nebraska. So an e-bike, if it is over 750 watts, this is the thing, it's considered a motorized vehicle, whether you have a throttle on it or not. Okay. So the bike, I did my research on the public land that I was able to hunt on and what consists of a motorized vehicle or not. I took the throttle, disconnected it, right? So I can't use the thumb. The only way the motor works is by pedal power, and it gives me assistance. Unlike the throttle on a, there's no human assistance in a four-wheeler or a side-by-side or a dirt bike, right? That right there is the, you know, that's how the power goes. But with this bike, disconnect the throttle, and I bought a minus, it was under 750 watts. It doesn't go over 20 miles an hour. And so that does not count as a motorized vehicle on certain public lands. And so I was able to use it on public land, because it would be considered a bicycle at that point. And so bicycles are legal on public land. And so I was like, dude, why not give it a try? And I tell you what, man, I got in so deep. I mean, one day I went in 6 miles deep, and just riding. And the cool part was, it was almost like there was a path laid out for me on some of these well-used cattle trails. And I was just taking like a highway back in there. And so I could get 6 miles in like 30 minutes. It was awesome. Right. I mean, it was awesome to get to use it. And so I'm going to, until the rules change, I feel like I'm going to continue to use that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the same thing here. It's the 750 watt rule.
Yeah.
So if like for instance, Massachusetts, I mean, to get in that far in the woods, it's kind of, unless you're at like a, you know, a conservation area where they have all these hiking trails and stuff, that it's just not going to happen. But man, like zipping down power lines, or the big thing with these is if you don't have parking access. So, you know, I had one spot that I go to and like doing observation hunts, you can see these bucks just, you know, crossing way out, going across this, you know, river that you would have to either have waders on or, you know, build a bridge to get over. And I mean, I was taking a kayak in there. I'd get up, you know, extra hours early, kayaking in, you know, with the waders, changing, you know, trudging through, getting up there. With the e-bike, it's a couple mile ride up the road, ditch the bike into the woods and get in because there's nowhere to park. So that's kind of where I use it for. But I mean, it's saving, and you're not sweating, man. You can bundle up, hop on that bike and get right in there. So it's a game changer, man.
Sure. Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And plus, like, I'm going to even use my e-bike on private ground in Iowa. Now, it's not the fact that the walk is going to be terribly long from where I would park my truck and where I would get to the hunting locations. It's the fact that I have limited access, and that access means I have to walk through a gate, like a 15, 16 foot gate. All right. And every time that I've gone there so far, I've been busted walking in because the deer can see the gate opening or walk through. Now, it's a working farm. So my thought process here is I use the e-bike as more of a strategy and less of actually an e-bike, right? So if I drive my truck down through there or an e-bike down through there, it doesn't look like a actual, I don't know, it doesn't look like a human or a threat. It's just another piece of farm equipment. They may not stick around, but they're not running away scared as opposed to if they saw me walking through there, you know, just me. So I'm playing that game, right, to try to figure out, you know, to figure out what spooks them and what doesn't with this limited access. I'll be able to ride my bike in there. It's quiet, but it's just from just a sight profile, it doesn't look like a human. It looks more like a vehicle. They may get confused. They may run off, but they're not scared. And so I'm hoping that helps me out on this private piece that I'm going to be hunting.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Do you have, is it a rear drive or a mid drive bike you have?
It's a mid drive, right?
Does it have that, I don't know what brand you have, but does it have that? So I have a mid drive. But it has that like click when you drive. Does yours have that on there? Like, so when you're going and you're not paddling, you'll hear like that tick, tick, tick kind of going on there? I guess it's normal for some of the bikes. I was curious.
Yeah. It's normal. It's also normal on regular bikes, right? So like on a regular bike, on a one where you have gears and you got to shift speeds, that if your pedals are idle, I just always keep my pedal moving slow in one direction. So I'm not trying to necessarily coast. The other thing is if I use the throttle, the engine's or the motor is always kind of going. And so I feel like I'm going to be not using the pedal power, but the throttle on private, on the private ground. And that should help me. It helped me. I hope anyway. So yes, sir. We're going to wind it down here. Any other products or categories that you want to touch base on real quick?
How about, like camping gear, like hunting out of the truck?
Oh yeah.
Sort of thing. So I do, I haven't done any trips where, you know, sleeping out of the vehicle, but I do fishing trips that do that. So, there is if you're ever in the market for a cooler, check out, you ever heard of Cater Gator?
Have not.
So they have they're molded coolers. I mean, they're the same thing as, you know, either, you know, Yeti or Arctic, anything like that. But there's a website called Restaurant Web Store, and check them out, man. You can get one of like a 170 quart cooler for under $300. And I got that thing and sweet, man. Kind of just a cool find when I was getting the car kind of rigged up for a trip I did this summer.
Yeah. Yep. And so you sleep out of the back of the truck?
Yeah. So we do familiar with, you know, Martha's Vineyard.
Yep.
There is a fishing derby that goes on there, you know, September to October. And we all kind of, you know, get everything rigged up. You have, you know, everybody has their cots in there, coolers, racks, rods, everything else. And yeah, we just camp out of the trucks for the week. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So I went on my entire Nebraska trip and I only spent one night in South Dakota in a hotel. And that was, I left a hunting spot and I was driving through a town and I didn't want to have to set up necessarily. It's not like I didn't want to set up in the dark, cause I did it every night anyway. I just was like, it was the last day of the hunt. And I was just like, I'm just going to get a hotel room, $140. But every other night I slept in the back of my truck on a foam pad that my wife actually bought for some crafting project and ended up not using. And so I laid that down. It's fairly comfortable. And then, what else? So that, and then here's my latest, biggest investment. And it was not cheap. It was $680, I think it was. It was a Western Mountaineering sleeping bag. It's a Made in America bag, downfilled. Dude, that is the best investment I've made when it's come to camping gear and equipment. I slept in Nebraska. The first two nights it was warm, so I slept with my sleeping bag open, and you know, the second half of the trip, cooled down. The South Dakota trip, every night got down to like high 30s, low 40s, and I was snug as a bug in a rug at that. Now, if you want to talk about the give there, that 6 days of my hunt was probably equal to, if I stayed in a hotel, was the cost of that sleeping bag. So it's already paid for itself in that aspect. And then it just became an instant return on investment as I'm going into the South Dakota hunt. And now, because I'm going on my whitetail hunt this week and next week, I won't be doing what I usually do and staying at my mom's house. Back where I'm originally from, I'm going to be sleeping in the back of my truck in potentially 20 degree weather. And I have this badass sleeping bag that I'm going to be able to take advantage of. And so, I'm really looking forward to all of the, you know, like all just doing it, saving money. And it really does, like sleeping in your truck on some of these hunts, I'm very comfortable. I'm very comfortable. And I'm very happy with how all of it works. And I've got my routine down with my, how I eat my food, my cooler, how I have everything backed, stuffed into the back of my truck. I take it out, put the sleeping bag and the pad in there, hop in, and we're good to go. So highly recommend investment on a good sleeping bag if you are the type of person who takes out-of-state hunts and wants to save money on not sleeping in a campground or a cabin or a hotel.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, definitely getting, all set up with your gear, before you do a trip like that is definitely huge. Having everything have that place kind of makes a world of difference, makes a trip a lot more enjoyable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we're winding down here, man. Ryan, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and chat with us. Good luck in the next coming weeks. Hopefully you slay. And again, thanks for your time today.
You too, man. Happy Halloween. And hey, if you ever decide you want to have a movie podcast, I'm in.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right, dude. I'll talk to you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.